You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost. Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental. From my apartment in Bed-Stuy, I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Charlie Davies, Matt Doyle, David Goss. What's up, boys? I felt it that time. I've been doing Brooklyn, New York, and it kind of just it didn't feel right. And as soon as I uttered New York, New York.
I have to cut you off there. I have to cut you off. I haven't had a great sleep this weekend because I feel unsettled. After I witnessed the Mount Rushmore that you guys put up on Twitter, that really just got under my skin, and it's been tough to let it slide until this moment right here.
So is this for you, Charlie, personal, or is this like you're on board? It's like, you know, the pitchfork wielding mob, the Twitter groupthink. Has it got to you, or did you feel this truly in your gut? And when you said you couldn't sleep.
This hit me to the core. This hit me to the core. I said, Alfonso Davies, are you out of your mind? All right. Everyone's going to agree with Landon Donovan. Okay. Six MLS Cups. It's not even a debate here. Okay. Marco Echeverry. He's the MLS Cup MVP in the inaugural season, the best player on that team, and the MVP in 98. Like, Marco Echeverry is Marco Echeverry. He deserves to be up there. He's like kind of like the George Washington, if you will.
Similar hair, too. I think they could both kind of have that kind of like curly perm. You throw one of those like triangle hats on him and stick him on a boat in the Delaware, and
there you go.
I'm here for it.
Now, this is where it gets interesting. You went with Alfonso Davies. Now, he doesn't even belong to be mentioned as a possible head up there on Mount Rushmore. Not even mentioned, okay? I'm going to go with Preki. Preki needs to be up there. The only two-time MVP in this league. I'm rocking the Wiz 96 right here, because when I think of MLS, I slept on this too. I felt real good knowing that Preki's face is up there, of what he meant to the league, how good he was in the league, and how he's just been, you know, you always see him on the sidelines now with the coaching staffs. I just firmly believe that he should be up there on Mount Rushmore. You're talking about history and the growth of the league. He was a big part of sticking with the league.
I respect it, Charlie. No, he defines it. I'm more interested, though, in the way you felt, man. Express yourself. When you saw Davies,
I was enraged. I was deeply unsettled.
I think Charlie was mainly thrown off because in the group chat we had said Davies, so I think Charlie assumed his face was going to be on the Mount Rushmore.
That was it.
He's already like picking out his sculptor. He's like, which side is my good side?
So then the fourth is David Beckham. Now, it's not because he was so good in MLS that you're like, I got to put him up there. It's because he just changed the game. You're not getting David Villa to come to this league. You're not getting Zlatan Ibrahimovic. You're not getting Robbie Keane. You're not getting Kaká. You're not getting Thierry Henry if Beckham doesn't come to this league. He changed the landscape of Major League Soccer. Yes. Don't you know. David Beckham put all eyes on the globe on MLS.
We put him on.
Here's what I'm saying.
Get mad at us about David Beckham. We put him on our list.
That's why I'm agreeing with you.
Okay. But here's the thing, Charlie. David Beckham encouraged other guys to get that money, whereas Alfonso Davies is the one bringing in money here. He's ours, baby. He's
how much
our
money
product.
Did he bring in?
He's encouraging European teams and others to value what we have.
How much money?
$25 million.
And how much did Almiron bring in?
He's not one of ours, 20? Necessarily.
I think Almiron was 28.
What is MLS trying to do? Be a selling league. And why? Because of what Atlanta was able to do with Almiron. If Miguel Almiron comes in, you go out and scout a South American player, right? Who's on the verge of being a star, not yet, but you see that the potential. You bring him to Atlanta, you have him play for a couple years, and you sell him for the big bucks, right?
Alfonso Davies starts for a Champions League team as a teenager. And let's start here. Vancouver can't afford Mikael Almiron. For Vancouver, Alfonso Davies coming through and doing what he did was better than anything they could have imagined.
The whole point is going down to get somebody who's going to perform like Miguel Almiron did. Alfonso Davies wasn't doing what Miguel Almiron did. As good as he was not doing what Miguel Almiron
He's also
doing.
6 years younger, and he's already doing more things in Europe.
Great. But you're still making money. You're still making more money.
South American players that are good. Atlanta didn't invent going to get South American players, having them play, and then selling them on to Europe. How much money deserves to be on your Mount Rushmore, if this is what you're going with?
How much money?
I wasn't even in the Alfonso Davies camp in the first conversation, and now I'm there.
Quick maths, Charlie. Quick maths. $8 million for Almiron. They had to pay for the man, so then you got $28 million. It's down to $20 million. Flip side is, MLS took a cut of that fee because that's the way it works. On Alfonso Davies, zero cut. He's a man from your academy. He represents your city. That, Charlie,
If Alfonso Davies won an MLS Cup and was hoisting that bad boy, hoisting an MVP, and I'd say, good job. You are right.
Who is going to be the face of this league? You bring up Beckham.
Nada.
But you bring up Beckham. When you're in Europe, when you're talking to people around the world about MLS, Beckham was the face of what MLS was for a lot of years. In the next 3 years, easy, but for the next 15, it's going to be Alfonso Davies. He's going to be starting in Champions League finals, and everyone's going to say, that guy is what MLS can be.
Why do we care so much about what Europe thinks 15 years from now?
Because Europe is the key of soccer. The championship in England is the number one league in the world. You have to have that respect.
So you think a left back is going to garner that much attention that everyone's going to go, wow, MLS is the league.
He already did. Because you have a left back.
Stop it.
He also may not be a left back by that point.
Stop it.
He's going to stop a left back.
Look, we can argue about this forever, but what the real point here is that I mourn.
But
I mourn
take
for Reese
over Javinka.
I mourn for
you
Dakota.
Take Preki over
and you know the one guy that
over
really
Dero.
You know what? Yeah, there's only two guys that really hurt. That hurt not to be on Mount Rushmore, and that's Dwayne De Rosario. And the reason why I find it hard to put him up there is because he played for so many teams. If Dwayne De Rosario only played for San Jose and then Houston and that was it, I would say he's got to be up there. But because he was switched from San Jose to Houston, which he didn't have any, he couldn't do anything about that. But then Toronto and then DC and then back to Toronto. There's too many and then New York, obviously the shortstop. Too many places for a player that is supposed to be iconic and legendary. Right? You're not letting a guy like that leave. But he was more like a lone wolf. He could get the job done. I have an incredible amount of respect for Dwayne De Rosario because I was able to play with him at DC. But if you're moving too many places like that, you can't be up on Mount Rushmore. Mount Rushmore is about growth and development, preservation and tradition. De Rosario can't be there. But Jaime Moreno, that's another name. But because Echeverry is already on the mountain, it doesn't feel right putting him up there as well. But,
dude,
definitely
Preki played for, like, every team in the Northern Hemisphere.
He played for MLS, though. He only played for two teams in MLS.
Stop it.
He played for two indoor teams.
If it was just excellence, Preki would have a good case. But Preki wasn't influential. He was the only two-time MVP. He had a couple of great moments for the U.S. national team. He won a bunch in MLS, but Preki didn't change the league. He was just a great player for 6-7 years.
That's how I feel about Wando.
I think it's the same thing with Wando, it's the same thing with Taylor Twellman. Like these are great guys. If there was an MLS Hall of Fame, they're all first ballot Hall of Famers, but it's not the same thing as being Mount Rushmore. To be on Mount Rushmore, you have to have that baseline of excellence, but then you have to have a level of importance. And I think they got it wrong with Alfonso Davies because his importance.
Yeah. Doyle wasn't on the episode. It's
today. I argued pretty strenuously against Alfonso Davies.
As a lawyer, you lost your case. You were 0-1 on the day.
That's fair. My argument, which I will reiterate, is that there is a before and after David Beckham and how this league did business and how this league was perceived on the global scale. Which changed the types of players they could get in and how much money they could make and then reinvest into the league itself.
That's why Beckham's on Mount Rushmore.
There is a before and after Miguel Almirón for that as well. You're right, David. There was Juan Toja back in the day. There was Freddie Montero, and these guys were like the beta test versions of what Atlanta did with Miguel Almirón. But Atlanta went into the deep end, and they came out with a star that they sold for $30 million. It should, like, it's changed. It changed, and it is still changing the way MLS does business, unlike anything that's happened in this league's history other than David Beckham, which you is why Almirón should have been there.
You know, this is a great sports argument because the number on Miguel Almirón's price keeps changing, and good sports arguments, numbers are fluid.
So what was it? It's like 28, 30?
I don't care. Your point is completely correct.
But where was that on Thursday?
I mourn for Dakota and Reese.
Here's the thing, though. I'll give Charlie this. He has set up one of the great cage matches in MLS history. If you put D-Row and Preki in a room and say you have to fight it out, whatever, 1v1 to be on Mount Rushmore, those are two of the players I think I've ever been around who feel slighted in every moment at all times, and it fuels them. I would love to see those two go after it, even at this age, to be like, one of you will be on Mount Rushmore.
I don't know if D-Row feels slighted.
Are you kidding me? Still to this day, every time he's like, well, you know, I did this. You know, I did this. And you're like, okay.
You don't remember this? The check writing? All the trades? Of course this dude feels... The fact that he wasn't a starter off the jump, the fact that his move to Europe got pushed off? Come on, he feels
that
slighted.
One hurts.
But the benefit of this scenario, we still get to put Alphonso Davies on there because neither of those two dudes are walking out of that room.
Yeah, that's true.
There's no... Like, it's just like they're both going down. So we get Alphonso Davies. And Charlie, look, the point is, Davies changed the league, and I mourn for your mindset with Dakota and Reese, man. We want them to have the opportunities, all right? Next generation, build them from the ground up. I want your boys to be the
all
next
I know
Alphonso
is
Davies.
That is not right, and you're disrespecting everybody who's put blood, sweat, and tears into this league.
Well,
putting Alphonso Davies on Mount Rushmore of MLS because he did not earn to be up there.
Did you get any texts about this? Did anybody reach out to you? Did anybody feel like when you weren't sleeping at night, was your phone filling up with messages?
Yes. And they said, you need to straighten out your boys. You need to straighten out your boys. And that's what I'm doing right now, because he doesn't even deserve to be mentioned for Mount Rushmore.
I don't know. He's a $50 million left back.
It doesn't matter. He didn't have enough of an impact.
$50 million player ever produced.
He could be $100 million. He could be worth $100
million. Like, that's a significant moment.
He did not do enough in the league.
But
he did not do enough.
Doyle is back. Doyle is back on our side. We win, baby. Let us know what you think.
He didn't do enough to be on the mountain.
Wait, Charlie, here's the lesson. If you don't want something stupid to happen on this show, you got to make sure you're on the episode. I learned that myself this past week when I finally saw the brackets and realized that you morons had chosen 2015 Red Bulls as the best Red Bull MetroStar team of all time over the 2018 Red Bulls. 2015 Red Bulls won the Supporters Shield, so did 2018. 2015 Red Bulls did it on 60 points. 2018 Red Bulls literally set a new league points record with 71 points. 2015 Red Bulls had a plus 19 goal differential. Decent, won't get you even close to Supporters Shield now. 2018 Red Bulls, plus 29 goal differential, one of the five best marks of all time. At the time, 2018 Red Bulls made it to the CONCACAF Champions League semifinals. 2015 Red Bulls got knocked out in the first round by Vancouver. 2015 Red Bulls got knocked out in the first round of the playoffs by Columbus, a Columbus team that was decent, but they'd go on to lose MLS Cup to a decent Portland team. 2018 Red Bulls smoked Columbus in the playoffs and then lost to an Atlanta team that I think we all agree is one of the five best teams in MLS history. And here's the thing. That 2018 Red Bulls, they broke Atlanta. Atlanta United broke because of that Red Bulls team. In late September, they had that great game that it was everything for the Supporters Shield. Both teams coveted it. It is the best Supporters Shield run, best Supporters Shield race that we've ever had in this league. And the Red Bulls just absolutely stomped them. And Atlanta was never the same after that. They became a sit and counter team because they knew they had no chance against the 2018 Red Bulls. And it was the right move. It was absolutely the right move. And Atlanta absolutely deserved that playoff series win and subsequent MLS Cup over the 2018 Red Bulls. But to choose the 2015 Red Bulls as the best Metro team of all time over that 2018 team, that
blasphemy.
Set record.
Blasphemy.
You were the driving force behind it.
Blasphemy.
You were the one. This is you. So for you to come here on this day and go after Kalen and David and
all day. All day.
About Alfonso Davies,
yeah,
when you were the one who laid the groundwork for this kind of idiocy, this is just peak ETR quarantine, folks.
Let's do it.
I got to work with you on branding next time, Doyle. You start the rant with Extra Time's greatest team of all time. Bracket is out and voting has begun. But, you know, I appreciate the emotion there, too. I think 2015 got upset.
Apparently, though. Sorry. Anders wants to set the record straight. Me and him have been talking on the side. I've never listened to an episode of ETR in my life, so I don't know what happened. He says that I led the charge and Charlie came in support and Charlie led it. I do not remember the episode. I would argue I wasn't even on the episode, but I just have to take a little heat off Charlie. But I still think it's Charlie's fault. So
Has everybody aired all their grievances?
Yeah, I was going to say, does anyone else have any psych?
Anything else?
I'm upset about season one of Instant Hotel, but I don't know that this is the place and time for it.
We got some mail about who would win in a fight between a taco and a grilled cheese sandwich. If we want to argue about that, but we don't need to because tacos stomp grilled cheese sandwiches into the ground.
Grilled cheese are stronger.
Get out of
tacos
here.
Tacos are strong.
Tacos all day.
Well, I mean, the real winner is going to be a bacon, egg, and cheese on a Kaiser roll because that's New York. That's how we do it here.
Fine. Fine. Look, let's get to the Extra Time's greatest team of all time bracket. We got our first results. We had two different regions go to battle. I think it was the Continental Tire region. Shout out the Continental Tires for making sure that Extra Time continues on. Forever and ever and ever, we hope. And I think the other one was the TAM region, if I remember correctly. You can vote in these things. It was Sunday into today. So thank you to everybody who voted. FC Dallas, I believe, got a win over 2007 Houston Dynamo based on basically the club retweet and all the fans flooding in. So that's one of five votes. We get the other four votes. So we'll decide who moves on today and we'll have more votes on the other side of the bracket. Come Wednesday into Thursday. So look out for that. There are 32 teams. You know how we got to them. 24 from each club, one represented per club, and then 8 at-large bids. Before we jump into this, how are we going to decide? How are you going to base your votes? As we look at, for instance, NYCFC against 2000 NYCFC against 2001 Miami, or 2010 RSL against 2012 San Jose and the Goonies. So Dave, how are you doing this? Mentally, how are you working through it?
Yeah, so I think my first criteria is which team was more effective in their era, more dominant, changed the game, whatever it is they did. That's my number one. And into number two, if that isn't an obvious difference, is then head-to-head. Which team, those two teams actually playing each other, the different factors that they had, how they would match up. And then if those two are not enough, number three, if I don't care enough, is whatever Doyle won't flame me for, because if I say something and I don't feel strongly and Doyle comes at me at 150 miles per hour, I can't have enough to deflect it. So I just follow his wake. So those are my three main criteria. So for example, for NYCFC Miami, it is which one changed the game and was more dominant. Then it would go to them matching up on the field. And then we'd go to whatever Doyle says. But I think the first one goes to Miami in that conversation.
All right, let's start from the top. Because we have to set winners here. That's our responsibility as we attempt to name the greatest MLS team of all time. Like 2017 Toronto FC was a one seed. They faced off against either 2019 Cincinnati or 2012 Houston as playing game. And this was a 91% vote from the fans for Toronto FC. I think it should have been 99, but somebody was somebody was pulling our leg here. There's like 9% of people that just wanted to like screw with us.
It's just Kalen voting over and over again.
Or Montreal fans.
Fair.
So Toronto FC moves on. I think I can award the winner there, but that brings us to a four seed, 2019 NYCFC, who won nothing against 2001 Miami, who were the Supporters Shield winners. So I don't know how they were the five seed here, but Miami, 52% from the fans to 48% from 2019 NYCFC. Doyle, do you agree with the vote? Does Miami move on here?
Miami should move on. Yeah, I mean, no disrespect to NYCFC, who were a great team last year, I think 64 points. But Miami, one of the few teams in league history to average more than 2 points per game. Their goal differential, plus 21 in just 26 games, because remember, that season was cut short by 9/11. And they lost in the playoffs, but they lost to the first Landon Donovan championship team. And you don't go against Landon Donovan in the playoffs, folks. That team, not only all that, but they played the most gorgeous soccer I think I've seen in this league up until last year's LAFC team. So just on an entertainment factor, I'm absolutely going to vote for Miami Fusion.
Anybody who has 2019?
No, I was going to say, to follow up Doyle, over 2 points per game, NYCFC was 1.8. It's hard for NYCFC because they're actually one of the top 10 point earners of all time in that season. But 57 goals for Miami that year, which is six less than NYCFC playing eight less games.
Yeah, fewer. That is fine.
Yeah, I'll take whatever I want. Doyle, I'm on your side. Don't burn me on this one.
Yeah, just agree with Doyle. Just, you said you were just going to agree with him.
Yeah. So I'm with Doyle on that one as well.
Plus Preki.
So then, Charlie,
and I still right? stand by the 2015 Red Bull New York. By the way,
it's not just Preki. By the way, Doyle, it's the top two goal scorers in the entire league that year, and Pineda Chacon, and then also with Diego Serna. I mean, they had the MVP.
Who should have won the MVP? Yeah,
they had the MVP. They had the second goal scorer. They had Preki. They had all these names and all these plaudits. They just didn't quite get it done in the playoffs. Same as NYCFC are there, but they got the trophy in the regular season.
But they also had guys like Chris Henderson, Pablo Mascherini, Carlos Llamosa, all guys who World Cup players. Nick Raimondo was their goalkeeper. Ian Bishop, who, Premier League veteran. That was a great team. That was a team you could put him in the league now. You'd have to give him five more depth pieces, but if you put him in the league now, that's still a 65-point team.
And it's not like NYCFC won a playoff series. So you can knock Miami for losing, but NYCFC hadn't done anything.
I think this is
anything.
Just a bad job of seeding by Anders. God. We all agree this is a bad job by Anders?
Oh, boy.
No, yeah. If you're ever going to complain about a seeding, you have to bring something back. Weeby can't be out here like, I think that was just a bad matchup.
No, I can't say anything. That's true. That's true. There were like 100 text messages in that group chat, and I just could not catch up to them. So I can't complain about seeding at all. 2001 Miami, stamp it. They're moving on with 2017 Toronto FC. This one's a fun one. 2010 RSL, 2012 San Jose, Goonies. This is a 3-6 matchup, Charlie. If you look at this, what does your gut say? The fans said 2010 RSL, 54%. To 46% for the Goonies.
I would go with RSL. That's what my gut says. Olave was an absolute beast at that time, and he could handle the Goonies. Like, just let Olave do the dirty work, and he's got you.
So set the table on that. This was the best defensive team in MLS history.
20 goals allowed.
Yeah, and then San Jose is a top five offensive team in MLS history, and what they did in 2012, top 7 or 8 in points all time. So this is one of the best matchups of this first round. Yeah, I think I agree with Charlie in that you're talking about the best defense in MLS history, what they were able to do. And then you also add into this, they were second in the league, but they were playing CCL from August through October in the group stage. They then moved into the fall, April of the next year and February playing through to the CCL final. So it's like about 16 months of high level soccer for this team, double competitions, all those types of things, and they were still able to perform at that level.
I think the difference too, when you talk about the Goonies, and they'll admit this. I mean, Alan Gordon said it on a stream that we did recently. Somebody else did too. I can't remember who it was. It's like they just didn't have the difference makers in the attack. They had guys who would change games, who would score goals, but when it came down to sort of that cagey playoff match, which RSL with that defense would have put it into, they didn't have the Javi Mo. They did have Wando. They did have Lenny. They did have Gordo, they were going to bludgeon you in certain ways, but then they didn't, even like an Espíndola, that sort of like this magic moment guy, even though he was inconsistent, they didn't
have it.
Marvin Chavez maybe is a close approximation.
No, not even close.
I don't know. Alvaro Saborío. I mean, when you go Saborío, up and down the team.
Espíndola, that combo, that was a lethal striker partnership because they complemented each other so well. Espíndola would get in the channels. He could dribble with his left foot. He could get by people. And Saborío was just a predator in the box. Big body, could hold up the ball well. And then if you served it to him in the box, he was going to finish more times than not. So that was just a very dynamic, complete team. And Javi Moe, he doesn't get a lot of credit. That's one player who isn't talked about, you know, that much. And when you talk about players who could grab a hold of a game and control, dictate the tempo, that was Javi Moe. He was so smooth. I loved watching him play.
And this is going to... Oh, sorry. You go, Noah.
No, like, I'm glad the Goonies made it into this bracket because that season was... Just to watch it unfold was magical. I think they scored something like 15 goals in the final 5 minutes and stoppage time. They ended up with 66 points. They were more like a 54, 55 point team. They deservedly won the Shield, and they almost beat the Galaxy in the playoffs, but like they didn't sustain it into the next year. Once people kind of figured out how to play them, it sort of fell apart. Whereas that RSL team, as David said, 16 straight months, but it's more than that. Like this was basically the same team that won 2009 MLS Cup, that kept making finals for the next 3 years as well. And there was a way to beat them, and Dallas showed it in those playoffs. You outrun them. You break the diamond apart with speed. Monterrey did the same thing to a lesser extent in the 2011 CCL finals. San Jose wasn't going to be able to do that. San Jose was just going to hit long balls, win second balls, and beat the hell out of you in the box. I think that Olave and Borchers would have been able to handle that. This RSL team, 45 goals scored, which, believe it or not, in 2010 MLS was a lot, and only 20 goals allowed. They're one of the few teams in MLS history that actually scored more than twice as many goals as they allowed. And I think if they hadn't been in CCL in the second half of that season, they would have won their second straight MLS Cup.
And to Doyle's point, they were second in the league in scoring, right behind the Galaxy. And then you add in this team, you drafted Chris Schuler that year, who, when healthy, was one of the best center backs in MLS for a little bit of time. And you have Tony Beltran.
That overstates it. He was a good center back.
We can talk 2013 later, but he kept them up when Hamison and Olave left, who was a defender of the year. And you have Tony Beltran on the bench as well. So you've got depth, you've got top-end quality, you've got winning in knockout competitions, you've got winning in regular season. So
was a strong RSL squad, that 2013.
Yeah, look, I think the seeding on this one, spot on, boys. Well done. 3-6. The fans got it
we
right.
We don't suck up. No one wants to hear it. It's kind of unbecoming of you.
That's fine. That's the last time you'll get a compliment from me. 2010 RSL. Moving right along so far. What, we have chalk so far? No, we have the 5 and 2001 Miami going on. So let's move to the 2-seed, 7-seed. And I was wrong. I thought 2015 Red Bulls got knocked off, but people did not respect 2016 Colorado Rapids. 77% in this matchup for the 2015 Shield-winning Red Bulls. Only 23%. For 2016 Colorado, who finished second
Colorado
that year.
Colorado couldn't score. They couldn't score.
Yeah, I know. That's fair.
They scored 39 goals all year.
This was easy. This one was easy. And that Red Bull New York team, I'll keep going back to it.
Boom.
Sasha Kljestan comes in and was just fire with Dax behind him. Complete midfield. I loved it. Bradley Wright Phillips still doing what he does best, scoring goals. The X factor for this team was Mike Grella. He came into his own with New York. And I've always thought Mike Grella, I've played with him growing up from 15 up, you know, with Eastern Regionals, ODP 1. And just seeing how he's always had skill, always had, you know, the ability to pull off these trick plays, but never really amounted to anything. In MLS, that year, it did. It did for him. And he was able to add that creativity, being able to think outside the box, bring something new to that team with that high press that they had, phenomenal. So that for me is why that 2015 team is better than the 2018 team, because of you had the veterans, the savvy vets.
They were still
like in their prime. I'm gonna take that team all day.
There was
Sasha Kljestan and Dax will be with me. They'd be behind me saying, "You're right." Like, that team was better.
The team that they were on.
Even Bradley Wright will tell you that 2015 team was bad.
I love that.
I was on the field. I've seen them. The 2015
team. 2015 team. They were a great team. They had the lowest points total of any of the last seven Supporter Shield winners. They didn't do anything in the playoffs. They didn't do anything in CCL.
No New York team's done anything in the playoffs.
They went to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Like, New York has done nothing in the playoffs.
No.
Wasn't Columbus versus Columbus was the Eastern Montreal?
Conference. Yeah, no, it was Eastern Conference Final.
Yeah, yeah, it was Eastern Conference Final. Oh, yeah,
it reversed it. That's right. They had that. They had that 2-0 aggregate win over DC.
Yeah.
Dak scored. Okay, yeah, Dak scored the winner in that one.
Yeah. Things change now. Come on.
So they both made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. One team won. Look, we shouldn't be arguing about this. We all agree that 2015 Red Bulls are better than 2016 Colorado.
Yes.
Yeah. The rant has happened. Let's just put the stamp on it. 2015 Red Bulls moving on. So we have one upset, quote unquote, 2001 Miami. Hard to call that an upset in this bracket because ultimately they were the Shield winners in 2001. Let's move it on down. 2014 LA Galaxy, the final of those championships there for them. And then you have 2019 Minnesota, who get run over, according to the fans. 12% for Minnesota, 88% for the LA Galaxy.
Just dominated.
I mean, do we have anything to talk about on this one? I don't think so. No. Give it to the Galaxy. Nope. Move them on. Maybe they'll have a tougher test in the second round because, according to the fans, they're going to take on 2016 FC Dallas. That's Mauro Diaz. That's Fabian Castillo. That is Speed Kills, who, according to the vote, 61% for them, 39% for the 2007 Houston Dynamo MLS Cup winners. Anders notes here that the vote swung back and forth, and then FC Dallas retweeted it, and that gave them the final push. So there's one vote. Do we agree with the fans? Do your votes go to 2016 FC Dallas? Because I don't think mine does. I think I'm going 2007 Houston Dynamo.
And why?
First of all, the championship pedigree, they got it done. I think just from a sort of like quote-unquote gamer perspective and also just legends within the squad, they had more of them than did that FC Dallas team. I think Mauro was extremely special. We've heard your rants about that, Doyle. Fabian Castillo was probably the hardest 1v1 matchup in the league in that time. But I think top to bottom, the Houston Dynamo roster at that time, if you put these two teams on the field, would look at this matchup and it wouldn't be easy, but I think they would trust themselves to grind it out, and they had as many difference makers.
They'd rough you up. They would be hitting Mauro Diaz. They'd be crushing Fabian Castillo. They had those vets. They played the game. Like, they would just try and out muscle you. It was a physical team. They did have those game changers. You know, Rico Clark in the midfield just banging everybody. Brad Davis, dangerous on set piece, and you have Brian Ching.
Do we consider Rico Clark to be a part of this? Because he wasn't a part of that that MLS Cup run in 2007.
But he is still on the team, and he did play a stretch of that season. And that also goes to depth. A player of that quality be there.
They still had Mulrooney, yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, honestly, I think that this 2016 Dallas team gets overlooked because they won the double. They won Supporter Shield, and they won U.S. Open Cup. And that's an amazing accomplishment. Then they lost their best player, and they still almost beat the Sounders in the playoffs. Win out on penalties, was it? I'm misremembering the playoff run. But anyway, I think I do feel like the Dallas team is better, but I think if it came down to an elimination game, my money would be on that Houston team.
I'm in the same boat.
That's a tough one. That is probably the toughest one for me to pick between.
Yeah, I would agree. I think you look at two teams that are similar in terms of what they did against their competition, although for Houston, they were one of the best defensive teams of all time. Their points per game is barely below what Dallas's was, even though Dallas won the Shield. And then you add that Houston wins MLS Cup. And part of that is when you know, going through the criteria, okay, you put the two on the field. This is a Houston team that I don't know, you know, dominates with the way they play and dictates what other teams do. But if you put them on a field with anyone, they'll figure out ways to win, right? And that's you've got that top.
Dallas didn't have a great goal scorer either. Yeah. Dallas didn't have like a great striker. So. Yeah.
I mean, if they had a great striker, if they had had Charlie Davies 2011, drawn PKs,
diving,
four PK goals, let's go.
That's the 65-70 point team.
There you go.
But no, I honestly think that this is, like, no disrespect to Dallas, because that was a great team and they did deserve their trophies. That Houston team, that was the last of that great dynasty. They just knew how to get it done.
I mean, this Houston team had a plus 20 goal differential.
Yeah.
Like, that is something else. And they didn't even win Shield, and they go on to win MLS Cup. So,
who finished first in the West that year? Anybody know?
Chivas USA.
Chivas USA, baby. We got another Brecky reference in for you. How many can we do? Are we awarding this one to 2007 Houston Dynamo? This would be another 5 seed over a 4 seed?
Yep.
Okay.
It's just like the NCAA tournament, man. Always 5 versus 4 upsets, right?
Beautiful. Beautiful. I don't want to talk about the NCAA tournament and upsets. I really, that's tough territory for me. Here's that 2018 Red Bull team. They're taking on the 98 Chicago Fire, and this is an incredible matchup. And this is where the quote-unquote upset happened, because that 2018 Shield-winning, point-total-setting Red Bulls team was a 3 seed, and the 98 double-winning Chicago Fire in their very first year was a 6 seed. The Fire, late rally here, because they were losing for a while, and I thought, this is going to be interesting. 51%, it was very close to 49% for the Red Bulls. So the fan vote goes to the 98 Chicago Fire, and I'm going to throw this to you, Doyle, because you maybe have the perspective needed. I didn't see the 98 Chicago Fire play. I wrote a column about this. One of my regrets is that I know what happened in the first 10 years of MLS, but I don't know what happened. You know what I mean? I don't have the context. I don't have the place and time. I don't have the personal memories. I didn't see the matchups. I didn't see the players live. All I have are old games and highlights, and it's not the same. You saw both of these teams. Which one's better?
The Red Bulls. That Red Bulls team... I respect everything that Charlie was saying about that 2015 team. That 2018 team was better. And it's not just because of the talent, though. In central defense, they were better. At left back, they were better. At right back, they were better. You could argue in central midfield, they were better, though I think that one's very close. Mike Grello had a nice year in 2015. 2018, Royer had a nicer year. Like, Bradley Wright Phillips had better goals and assists in 2018 than he did in 2015. All of that, but the way they played the game, it wasn't just distinct. It was unique. What the Red Bulls did in 2018 was treat winning 50-50s the way everyone else treated completing passes. They took the notion of high pressing, and they just amped it up to its highest level till it almost became farcical. But teams couldn't deal with it. And that's why they literally set the point record and pretty frequently outplayed one of the 5 best teams in the league. Now, that 1998 Colorado team, or Chicago team, rather, they were an expansion team. Bob Bradley built them. We know he does well building expansion teams. They were one of the best and are still to this day one of the best counterattacking teams in league history. And if you go back and you watch that MLS Cup against the 1998 DC United team, like first 25 minutes, Chicago's not even in the game. But as soon as they get a chance to go forward on like a semi-transition, it all runs through Peter Novak. Everybody knows their roles. They get the goals off of Peter Novak's brilliance on the counter. And that was how they played. Behind him, they had guys like Jesse Marsh and Chris Armas, who would just kick the hell out of you. They played with a true sweeper in Lubosch Kubik, who had, a Harris Mandunian type left foot. He was awesome. And so many of those counters started with him on the ball, hitting these long 50-yard diagonal outlets. They were a truly great team. You don't beat that year's LA Galaxy and DC United teams if you're not a truly great team. But the gap between what that era is and what this era is and what that Red Bulls team did and what that Chicago Fire team was, I think it's 2018 Red Bulls. I think it's what we should call Jesse Marsh. We should see what Jesse has to say. And Chris Armas.
Some actual experts. I gotta lean for Doyle as well in terms of...
Hey, that's rule number 3, baby.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, that's how I feel, though. Yeah. You're talking about two teams that were great at their time. You're talking about two teams that accomplished a lot of things. I think Doyle makes a good point in the way New York played, to change the way people perceived the game, what could be done in this league. And then on top of that, to lose to Atlanta in the Eastern Conference Finals the way they did, which is a team that we're going to have deep in this competition, I think even gives them more credit of just, they push them in the regular season. They set the points record at the time, which I think always has to be mentioned, because we look back on history, but you know, when Toronto did it in 2017, when these teams did it in 2018, we didn't think it was possible what they did, the rate they did it at, week in and week out. So I agree with Doyle. One of the things he said was they were better at left back, which makes no sense because it was the same player. But Tyler Adams...
Kamar Lawrence was a much better player in 2018 than he was in 2015.
But you talk about Tyler Adams at his peak in MLS. You talk about Aaron Long and Tim Parker at center back, which was the best pairing in the league and arguably still is. All those things. So I lean with Doyle as well for New York.
How much of a danger is there of sort of era bias? And I guess that was partially what I was getting at when I was talking about how I didn't see that 98 Fire team play. So part of me lionizes them because of the double, because of the names in there, because it was their expansion season, because I have this like nostalgia for old school MLS. Like, how do we balance that sort of difference in eras that you referred to, Doyle? Because mostly we have gone with the more modern era team. Now, we did go 2007 Houston Dynamo, and maybe we overvalued who they were at that time based on the quote-unquote gamer model. How do we bridge that gap? Does that matter in this case? Should we consider it?
I think so. It's going to matter with the 1996 Mutiny. 1996 Tampa Bay Mutiny would not win a single game because they were an old style soccer team that all revolved around one player. The 1998 Fire were a much more well-rounded, much more dangerous team. And, you know, Bob Bradley, they had maybe the best coach in MLS history. There is a danger. I mean, there's a danger of recency bias, but there's also a danger of being trapped in the past. And that's why this whole thing is hypothetical. I wish we could figure out a way to put it on the field. One thing I would say is that, look, the reason Atlanta United became a counterattacking team against the Red Bulls in 2018 is because the Red Bulls beat the hell out of anybody who tried to do anything with the ball, but you could counter them. Now, if this 1998 Fire team beats the Red Bulls, like, it's because they were that good on the counter. Like, they were just absolutely superb on the counter. They could sit back and absorb and just go forward all at once. So it's a tough matchup. There is an argument either way. And as you said, David, you know, the Red Bulls against that Atlanta team is going to go very far. Well, it's the Fire beat the 1998 DC United team, which I think might still be the best of those DC United teams. So it's like both of these teams have great arguments. It's a sham because this should be the 2015 Red Bull team. The 2018 Red Bull team should have gotten the Patsy in the first round against the 2016 Rapids.
Where's your vote going, Charlie?
I'm going Fire.
Ooh, Fire.
Fire. And I get the whole argument of different eras competing against each other, just like the Bulls. We're watching 1996 Bulls, and then 20 years later, the Golden State Warriors beat their record. But like Michael Jordan said, it don't mean a thing unless you get the ring, right? So you have to win the championship. And that team, that 96 Bulls team, if they just played the Warriors in a heads up, do you think they're gonna beat the Warriors when they can outshoot you from all over the place? Like, probably not, just because the level of athlete is just that much better now as opposed to then. But then you have those players who are transcendent, who can play in any era, right? That Chicago Fire team had many players who could play now. If you transport them to now, because of just their skill in the ball, the awareness, their mindset, the way they approach the game and how quick they're able to think in game, doesn't matter. You can play in any era because they were that good here. And that's the difference. I think they had a lot of players who had played at the highest level. You talk about Peter Novak, what he could do on the field. He could play no matter where. You could put him on the field, he's going to do his thing. They had so many veterans who could get the job done and figure out a way to win. So I would take them in a heads-up match against that 2018 Red Bulls.
So my worry, Charlie, would be, like, if you're talking about the 98 Red Bulls, it's either Marsh or 2018 Red Bulls, is Marsh or Armas game planning for that? And, like, they're going to look at tape and they're going to take away Kubik. They're just going to have Bradley sit right on top of Lubos Kubik and not allow him to hit those outlet passes. And without those outlet passes, without him, like, there's a reason people don't use sweepers anymore, right? Like, I think he becomes a target and sort of the soft underbelly of that Fire team. I mean, again, I can see it going either way, but it's just, there's just an old fashionedness to it because of that sweeper. Mm-hmm. It would be fascinating to see it play out.
Isn't the flip side of that, that Bob Bradley would, in this, as he approaches it, the 1998 version knows what that press is going to do and tactically changes it?
But the sweeper, like, you couldn't tactically change that much. Like, that sweeper, that defined a lot of who that Fire team was, in the same way that the 4-3-3 defines a lot of what Peter Vermes does in Sporting Kansas City. So there was flexibility for the time, but there wasn't – I don't know if there would be enough against the modern team.
That's two votes, Charlie and the fans, for the 98 Fire.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's two votes for you guys?
Yeah.
For the Red Bulls?
Yep.
And that puts me in a position I really didn't want to be in. Because I just don't know. And I don't know.
And you want Bob Bradley, Chris Armas, and Jesse Marsh to all come on the show again as guests, and you're going to piss off most of them. Either way.
Let's be fair. Bob's pissed no matter what. Even if we pick Chicago, it was for the wrong reason. So you're safe on that one.
Right.
The question's with Jesse and Chris, who we could ask. But to go back to Doyle's point, I think when you're asking that question of like how you weigh the two eras, you have to look at their dominance in their era, against competition, in their time. The New York Red Bulls set a points record above a team that is considered one of the best in MLS history when Chicago, being a great team, didn't even win the Shield their year. So what Charlie's argument was, which I think is correct, goes into the playoff model even more of you trust Chicago on the field in a one-on-one game because of what they could do, reacting to the other team. But you look at what New York did to change the way the game was played and dominate over the course of all these months later on in history and put up 71 points, which we didn't think was possible.
But then when it mattered.
Charlie, would you take the 98 Chicago Fire over the 2018 Atlanta team?
Would I take the 98 Fire over the 2018 Atlanta team? No chance.
So then they're the same scenario. Then if they get into this playoffs, they're the same scenario as New York.
They didn't win. They didn't win the cup.
But if we're talking about, okay,
New York didn't win the cup.
I get your argument about 2018 Red Bulls changing the game, changing the approach, ushering something new into MLS. But didn't, you know, they had years to build into that. That was a project that came to fruition. The Fire didn't have years to build into that. And what they did in some ways changed the league as well, because it meant that you could come in and if you built your roster the right way. Now, maybe this speaks to the relative strength of MLS and the other teams and projects and rosters at the time, but in year one they were able to come in and win a double. They did something unprecedented. No other team has ever done that. In many similar ways, it is another part of history that doesn't have a match. And I'm just wasting time here because I don't have a good answer.
While you're thinking, I'll say this: expansion was different back then. They didn't have the restrictions that teams from 08 through 2016 had in terms of having to take players from expansion draft, blah 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 blah. And on top of that, if you're going to say they changed the way teams did it, 96 was an expansion year for everyone.
Yeah.
And DC and LA put together the teams that they had, and DC continued to be that good for four more years after that. So I would slight that a little bit in terms of just the expansion argument being like, yeah, they hit the ground running in year one. I don't know that it's as strong as saying a team in 2020 comes in as an expansion team and is the best team in MLS. Mm. You got to make a vote at some point. Weebs, you're going to be wrong either way.
Yeah, that's fair.
My advice would be never side with Charlie because you don't want to end up on that end of history.
It hurts me to say this because I am somebody who looks at that 98 Fire team despite not truly knowing them and has so much admiration for all the guys on the team, all the coaching staff, what they were able to accomplish in a different era in terms of the, even just like sports science and all these different things, but I think I got to go with the Red Bulls. I think that regular season, that level of consistency, that sort of like collective game-changing ability, because they just punched people in the mouth repeatedly and drove them into the ground. I don't feel good about it, Charlie. I know that you're upset with me. I know that you're frustrated. I know that you may never let this go after the whole Mount Rushmore thing. I just,
we just started getting, it's, we like, this we is,
ultimately this is my own bias because I just didn't see the 98 Fire team. I just didn't see them play. So I can't imagine imagine them.
What if we put Alphonso Davies on that 1998 Fire team? Then would that push them over the top for you?
1,000% every day of the week. I mean, he is MLS Mount Rushmore. So I think, okay, sorry, Charlie.
I could do more for Charlie, but I feel like the more I say, the more I'll piss him off.
Sorry. 2018 Red Bulls, move on, and I don't feel good about it. I want everyone to know that. The final matchup voted on this week.
I hope you're agonizing. I hope it's agonizing.
I am. It hurts. Can you not see it? Can you not see how conflicted I am?
It feels like a bee sting.
Bee stings don't hurt that much.
A
murder hornet sting.
Yeah, the mandibles are pulling me apart right now.
Oh.
All right, final matchup here. 2014 Seattle, 2003 Chicago Fire. 2003 Chicago Fire, we had arguments that they were potentially the best team. You know, you have DeMarcus and Bocanegra coming into this team. 31% for the 7 seed, that 2014 Shield winning Seattle Obadus team had 69%. That was nice. Who are we going with here? Both won the Shield, if I remember correctly. Neither got it done in the playoffs. We going with the fans? Charlie,
we'll you go first. Why don't you lead the conversation so we can all follow?
Obadus. That's all I'm going to say. Obadus, Chad Marshall in the back. Like
Ozzy.
Lock it up. Lock it up. Ozzy, just lock it up. Strong spine.
I agree with Charlie. I'm also amazed that one of the largest responses we got on social media was Seattle fans complaining that this was the team that got in and not 2019 or 2016, which makes no sense. So I appreciate that. I appreciate that angst at all times, but I go with this 2014. I think this team, this Seattle team, has a shot to get to like a Final Four or something like that because they were incredible to watch. They had top-end talent. They have arguably one of the best players at their position up the spine in their prime. When you look at Fry, Marshall, Ozzy into Obadus. So I think they're going to be a contender in that conversation. And I love this team. So yeah, 2014.
Yeah. I don't think there's much debate about this matchup. It's 2014 Seattle. That said, one of the what ifs for me is what if Chad Marshall doesn't get hurt in the 2018 playoffs against Portland, because Seattle in the second half of that year, they'd had the best half season in terms of points per game in MLS history. I think they set the single season or the winning streak record, right? They had like 11 wins in a row or something like that, only lost once. And then they had that epic series against the Timbers where both Ozzy and Marshall got hurt, if I recall correctly. If they hadn't, They breezed through the Western Conference, and then we're talking about them versus Atlanta in that 2018 MLS Cup, which would have been something else.
2014 anyway, Seattle. Moving
2014
on.
2014 Seattle, sorry.
All right, we've made our decisions here. Fan voting for the Discovery Rights region, sorry, in CCL, begins on Wednesday. We'll tweet that out. As you look at these matchups, anything stand out to you? Any, like, 3 through 6 seeds in here?
So you're talking about the next one or this one?
The next ones, yeah.
I look at
maybe that 2002 LA Galaxy, but they're up against 2008 Columbus, so that's difficult for them to even get through the first round. I mean, 2011 LA Galaxy and a 5 seed. I think, you know, it's pre-Keen, I guess, but – or no, Keen was second half of that year.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
that's a tough one.
One of the things that we have to mention with the Galaxy, and we'll do this as we go through these games, is like the complete – lack of caring about Open Cup and CCL at times for some of these teams. That team lost to the Puerto Rico Islanders in a playing game for CCL the same year RSL went to a final. So, like, to me, that has to be a factor with how many competitions are you in? How hard are you playing in those competitions? How widespread is your team?
You also have to remember some coaches didn't care.
Agreed.
About those other competitions. So,
But that has to hurt maybe your team in that you could focus in the regular season better than a team that was playing in a CCL final.
Not necessarily. I mean, it went from team to team. It was different approach for different coaches, different organizations, whether you wanted to win, whether you wanted to win everything, whether you wanted to just say, you know what, we're just going to play our reserves. Maybe we'll sprinkle in some starters. It's really tough to balance what clubs took the CCL for real versus which clubs are like, we don't really care about that, or we don't even really care about the regular season. But we just care about the playoffs.
So I think it's okay to penalize clubs for that.
That's what I'm saying. It has to be.
Like, this is how we canonize the great clubs in MLS history, is you go out there and you try to win it all. Mm-hmm. And that's what's been wonderful. People are going to hate this, but this has been wonderful about Atlanta coming into the league. That is, as soon as Atlanta came into the league in 2017, they said, we're going to try to win everything. We are not going to rest players. We are not going, you know, I mean, obviously they rest them a little bit, but like they try to push through and win every competition they're in. And like, we needed that. The league absolutely needed that. And that's why we'll remember these Atlanta teams, even though they haven't won everything, as something special in the history of MLS.
Don't you have to put Seattle in that convo too, to win Open Cup coming into the league, to make the playoffs every year, to compete at a high level as an expansion team and not take that as an excuse?
Yeah, but Seattle hasn't given a damn about the Shield since 2014. They don't really care about the Open Cup either.
I mean, look, I wouldn't get on a flight to go play the Railhawks either.
Should put the Railhawks in this bracket so we could just knock the Galaxy out early and on every matchup. We just put the Carolina Railhawks in.
All right, let us know if you disagree with us, if we got our votes wrong, what you think about the bracket so far. Wednesday, voting will open up the CCL region and the Discovery Rights region. We are down to 24 teams left over. And so you got 8 more first-round matchups, and we'll go into the final 16. Let's get to the mailbag. The call up hit us up. What's Matt Doyle's suggested cocktail of the week? This is what everybody wants to know.
What do we got?
So, shout out to my buddy Dan, who actually sent me a cocktail book about Amaro, which is an Italian liqueur. We're going to go with the Chinara. It's an ounce and a half of bourbon, a half ounce of Chinar, which is a bitter Italian liqueur, a half ounce of Aperol, which is a slightly less bitter Italian liqueur, and a little bit of bitters. And then you serve that on the rocks. Chinara.
Mm, that's beautiful.
Mm. Yeah.
There you go. There's our cocktail of the week for Matt Doyle.
I'm 412-206-0-1. I'm drinking the Blue Jay, which has beer in the cocktail. So
that's
my cocktail of the week. That's how you know it's classy.
It's classy.
Ryan has lots of time on his hands. He hit us up. He ran numbers on our Mount Rushmores. These are players who are not in their club's top 10 for all-time appearances or goals that we put on the Rushmores. I don't really think that's a great measurement, but it is a measurement. Davies and Demerit in Vancouver, Amaya and Gutman in Cincinnati. Come on, we were mostly just trolling you with the Cincinnati Rushmore. Beckham for the Galaxy, but come on now. Pope for DC, yeah. Blanco for Chicago, and Aparra for Minnesota. I mean, I can't punish Ike for that.
Did Blanco get on the Chicago one?
I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. Kalen. Remember Kalen?
Yeah, Kalen and the Charlie. Vote. Yeah.
David.
I may not have been on that episode.
Yeah. Hard to remember these things. David and Skokie, ETR Mount Rushmore. He says, for the best MLS team of all time, I wonder if a random draw, U.S. Open Cup style, would be better. Might lead to quarterfinal matchups that feel like they could be a final. Maybe avoid games where people just choose the favorite or choose the underdog to be contrarian and curry favor with Doyle. So everybody's curry in favor with Doyle. But this is the interesting one that David sent. Charlie talked about what a jersey trading hound he is. What are the protocols about jersey trading? I can't read. As a forward, were you more likely to trade jerseys with another forward or with the defender against you who you battled? Were there guys who just didn't trade jerseys? What are the rules here? Are they unspoken? Are they spoken before a game?
It's a complicated process. It's a very complicated process.
Everyone get a notebook out.
Yeah, you have categories. So there's the fanboy. Mm. The fanboy is a player on the roster who typically didn't play. You're an unused substitute. And you rush off the bench to go hunt for the most popular jersey, a popular player on the field.
Are you taking a dig at London Woodbury here because he got that Thierry Henry jersey when you wanted it?
It was Drogba. Yeah, he got Drogba, but he was playing, so I can't really.
If you're the fanboy, do you do you take off your warm up top so the guy's like, did he play? Did he not? I can't. Do you like throw some water on your head so you look sweaty, or do you just
you could, but you're typically you don't got the warm up top on. You top that off. You just got your jersey. You run up to him. You say, hey, can we switch jerseys?
Do you swap to him knowing that he's probably going to throw it in the trash on the way out, or
you do it? Yeah, you offer it. I never did that. Never. I never traded jersey if I was on the bench. Like in a whether I didn't play or, you know, international games I didn't play, I'm not going to ask for a jersey.
But if you subbed out, I didn't earn it. Still, I didn't trade.
Yeah, if I subbed, yeah. But if I didn't play, I was never trading a jersey. I was like, I didn't earn it. I'm not going up to somebody.
Okay, we got the fanboy. What are the other categories? Okay.
The other category is respect. You're on the field. You're battling against the player in you know, that you have to go up against. If I'm a striker, I'm battling these center backs. After the game ends, you're like, man, I hated you during the game, but I respected the way you played. I respect the way you approached the game. It was a real challenge. I'm going to remember you and your performance. Like, let's trade jerseys. Like, I enjoyed that. That was.
Can you give us some examples there?
Yes. Olave. We battled like just elbows and I had cuts all over my legs and it was like I was sore after the game. And he looked at me, I looked at him, and I said, yeah, respect, bro. Let's do it. And we traded. Drew Moore, when he was with Colorado Rapids, another guy, battled. You know, we battled in college. I looked at him, I said, yeah, you know, let's trade jerseys, and same thing. So those were two guys that when I look back to, like, man, we battled and I appreciated like swapping jerseys. That definitely sticks out in my mind. Then the role model, Thierry Henry, was my like idol, you know. 2011 DC United, I get a chance to play against him in Red Bull. First time I've met him, seen him. He shakes my hand before the game when you're doing the starting 11s and he's like, you know, I wish you all the best. You know, we're all behind you. It's courageous what you're doing that you're back on the field after, you know, what you've gone through. Like, that'll always, always be a highlight in my mind, and swapping jerseys after at the end of the game with him. You know, that's one of those things that motivates you, pushes you, and also justifies why he was your favorite player and your idol as you know, a young professional.
Let me ask you this, Charlie. If you could only keep one jersey that you swapped, would it be the Henry jersey? Or is there another one out there that you would say, man, this one just has a little bit more meaning to me. I have to hold on to it.
It would be Henry, although it's a tough one because that 2014 final, I swapped jersey with Landon Donovan and everything we did together on the national team, what he meant to me, you know, that's a pretty meaningful one. It was his, you know, his first retirement jersey, if you will.
It was the last dance.
Yeah, and just like the whole process of like climbing the mountain again, you know, getting back on it, fighting to get on the field and be influential and have an impact. And I felt like that 2014 season was like, I really earned my minutes. Like, I earned it, and helping the team get into the playoffs and performing the way I did with that New England team in 2014, it all felt like it was meant to be.
How'd that one go down?
Yeah, I was about to ask, do you do that and then have the trophy ceremony? Do you walk over and trade right after a final?
I think right after the game, I walked up to him and it was just, and I was like, I don't know if he's going to trade this jersey. Like, it's his last one.
Yeah.
You know, he just won an MLS Cup with his last, and we traded. And I was like, wow, you know, that goes to show like, it was significant that it meant something. Cause he could have easily said, hey, I have a jersey in the locker room, or I'll give you you know, one of the old ones. Like, but he swapped it. And then there's the kit man. The kit man grabs a bunch of jerseys from the team that you're playing and you go back to the locker room and he's kind of like, pick which one you want. And you're like, and you grab one. So that's how you break down the criteria.
Hold on. Is there like a line? Is there like seniority where, you know, like, let's say I'm like, I just got on the team. I'm a young buck. I don't get to just walk in and be Ronaldinho.
Nope. If you're a young guy, you got to earn your stripes. Unless you're a star and you're playing left and right and you go up to an older guy, a veteran who's a leader, respected. And he's like, you know what? I can see you're the up and coming player. You know, like, I have respect for you. Give you the jersey and probably give you some advice. Hey, think about this. Do this. Kind of like what we saw in the last dance with Michael Jordan talking to Kobe Bryant in the All-Star game. Like, I'll help you. Hit me up. Here's my number. Whatever you need in the future, you need some advice, hit me up and I'll gladly help you out.
What's the breakdown club versus international? What percentage of games are you doing a trade?
I did every one.
You traded every game you played?
Mostly, yeah.
Every club and international.
Yeah, both. mostly international club. Every game, you know, there's different circumstances. You lose a game, it's in a horrible way, or you had a horrible game. You're not looking to trade jerseys, you know. So you just go back to the locker room. Then there's the games that were good. Maybe it was a draw, but then you have a friend on the other team. That's the other category. You have a friend, a close friend. You know, I'm playing against Alejandro Bedoya, one of my best friends. Playing against Maurice Adoo. I'm playing against some of your closest friends. You know, Clint Dempsey. You're swapping jerseys. Or you have friends who play on club teams, like Stu Holden was playing at Bolton. I was playing in France at Sochaux. We meet up. I go visit him. We swap jerseys. Just, you know, here's a jersey. I signed it for you. He signs one for me. We swap. Gooch played at Milan. He gave me his jersey. I gave him my French jersey. So you have those occasions as well where friends meet up and you swap jerseys.
In the friends, how many do you have right now?
Hold on.
All right, I have a lot. I have a lot of jerseys. I have a lot.
You have a wine cellar of jerseys to keep them.
Yeah, intact? I do have. I do. I do.
Keep it 45 degrees.
My top two, Kaká and Henri of players that I've traded with in MLS. Those are my top two.
If the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame asked for the Donovan jersey from 2014. You give it on loan? Like, what do you have? Like a plan for
this? I'd say it's untouchable. It's an untouchable.
Charlie can't would say, it. This is what you do. Here's the exhibit. You can fly to my house. You can ask to come in. You can see the jersey.
Oh, it's an interactive, you know, it's all about interactivity. You gotta
have the white gloves. Yeah. It's in a glass case. You got the white gloves. I'd let them, you know, pick it up and look at it, inspect it, and then you gotta put it back.
Okay, so since we're talking about 2014 a little bit, so on the next show, or over the next couple of days, we're going to do voting on the next brackets. Discovery Rights Region, LAFC, last year's LAFC team, is the number one seed. Your 2014 Revs are one of the play-in seeds. So just so the folks understand, Charlie played about half the games in the regular season, 3 goals, 4 assists in 1,100 minutes in the regular season, then 4 goals and 1 assist in 5 games in the playoffs. Had a very good year for a very good Revs team. Make the case to the fans why they should vote for your Revs team over the LAFC team that we all saw last year was the best team in MLS history.
We had a great game plan because we could counter teams, and that's what we would do with this LAFC team. You sit back, you try and make them break you down. You don't give them space. Carlos Vela is a player that will break you down, and we'd have Jermaine Jones. We'd say, Jermaine, your goal is just to disrupt Carlos Vela. He's going to check in. He's going to try and turn people. Just be a beast. Just frustrate him. And then the other guys on the outside wings, I'm not too worried about them. If they don't have space in behind, I'm not too worried about them causing problems for us. Lee Wynn, one of the best players in that year at holding the ball and creating for us. So we could play him in a ball in a tough situation. He could get out of it because he was that good. And then he could find Teal Bunbury into space. He could find whether it was Diego or Kellen Rowe on the left wing who typically played more in the midfield. And then me, I was just stretching the field. So if they were pressing so high, I was going to get in behind. Teal Bunbury was getting in behind. And we'd get our chances. We would get our chances. That's for sure. Would we do enough to prevent LAFC from scoring that one or two, you know, a couple of goals and then them changing their game plan? Because Bob is got a huge advantage on Jay Heaps as a coach. So you have to throw that in there. But we did have a fantastic team. We had a complete team, and we could defend like no other and counter better than most teams. So we would have a shot. If there was ever a team that could cause an upset, it was that 2014 Revs team.
Guys, I'm sleep in on Thursday. No, my vote's for the Revs. Upset, baby. 8-1 team.
No, the real upset is going to be when the Revs lose to Cincinnati in the play-in round.
That would not happen. That no Cincinnati team has beaten that 2014 Revs team. I can guarantee you that.
I'm just here for the positional responsibility that Jermaine is going to have to show to Mark Carlos Vela across the field. Jermaine, don't go marauding forward. By the way, Jermaine has a new podcast, and he's making news already with that one. So we got a competitor coming up on Thursday. We'll do the other side of the bracket. Votes on Wednesday. Watch our Twitter account. Add extra time for that one. We're also going to do a little last dance inspired mail. And U.S. national team Mount Rushmore. We ran out of time today, so look forward to that one with Kaylin Carr. With that, we're out of here.
And we might do a Central. How are you going to do that one without me? Come on.
Which one do you want to do, Charlie? Do you
Charlie,
do
this? It's best if we do things without you, because then you're so pissed off coming into the next
one. You want to do the shoes one, Charlie, or the U.S. national team one? We're not doing the U.S. national team one. We're not doing either of them.
No, not the U.S. one, but at least The Last Dance, a story within MLS that would be worthy of a documentary.
We'll save that one for you next Monday, all right?
Okay. That's our gift. As long as you do that.
That's our gift to you, Charlie Davies. We're out of here.
That's the least you could do after you put Alphonso Davies on Mount Rushmore. Are you crazy?
Hey, sleep.
That's at least Charlie, that's the least you could do.
Sleep well, man. Chamomile tea. That's my recommendation right. to you. We're out of here. We'll see you on Thursday, everybody.